Good morning, sausages. Which plant only grows in the path of a beautiful goddess? It gives you a 1 in 5,000 chance of having good luck, and it represents the Holy Trinity. It's clover. But is it death or dinner?
Yeah! Hey, come on a walk with Eat the Country and myself, Tom Radford. It's wild food, wild stories, wild history, wild medicine, death or dinner. It's learning about nature, but without it being boring.
Explain the title, Death or Dinner, because that's quite the title.
Well, Death or Dinner, I mean, that's the thing, because I discovered that people have a fascination with things that are dangerous. And so when you go up to a plant and you just go, Death or Dinner, because when people want to forage, the thing that puts them off is whether they're going to get hurt or they're going to get sick or whatever it is. And when you're dealing with things like mushrooms, people are so fascinated by dangerous mushrooms. And so, you know, sometimes on the walk, if I do come across something which is dangerous, I'll say, right, okay, everybody, death or dinner. And the amount of people that get it wrong, but also they learn so much by that experience, they think, my God, I'd have died. So whilst we do have a lot of fun with this, you kind of do have life and death in your hands, but you've got to know what you're doing.
I mean, I know you've been fascinated by this for many, many years, really from childhood, haven't you? Tell us how it all began.
Well, yeah, totally. I mean, when I was a kid, I grew up in the New Forest, and which was like a wild sort of Christopher Robin type childhood, climbing trees, you know, building dams and rafts and things. And I was given a copy of the SAS Survival Handbook, which is a bit of a Bible for me as a kid, and it had a foraging section in it. So we started like going out and trying a few things and mushrooms and stuff. And I've always kind of dabbled for a lot of my life. But I think the time that it really kicked off was when I got back from, I was living in Asia and, you know, I got divorced and stuff. And I came back to London. It was COVID. Everyone was miserable. And I thought, well, I really wanted to do more video stuff. I'd been working in a production company. And I thought, let's do something with this sort of love that I have for nature and do something online with it and then really immerse myself in it. And I've just since then, I've just been absolutely hooked on it. And I love it. I now, you know, when you go for a walk, you recognize all the different species, all the stories and everything that go with it. And also in terms of like local seasonal sustainable food, because I really want to try and support local businesses. So obviously it's low carbon. And it's just great, you know. I try and do stuff with pubs and organizations that eat local food. I do stuff with game and stuff as well, because obviously for me, there's an animal welfare element to that. And it's sort of taking over my life, but it's bloody good fun.
And it's also sort of reintroducing our palate, isn't it, to something that we made years and years and years ago, you know, hundreds of years ago, probably, we were doing this. We were eating from the land. But it's something we do less now. We tend to go more for sort of prepackaged foods, food that comes from all over the world. And our palates have changed, haven't they? So you're sort of having to reintroduce our palate to something that's a bit more, well, closer to home.
I often start my walks by saying, I don't want to disappoint you, but a lot of this stuff just tastes like a poor substitute for spinach. Because a lot of it isn't especially tasty, but it is extremely good for you. And then there are things that taste amazing as well. But the thing about it is, I mean, for example, you know, when you know how many plants are, and so many plants are edible, and some of them are very, very common, so you haven't got to feel bad about picking them. You can put, you know, some dock leaves or some burdock or something like that into your soups and stuff, and it just makes it, it has just that much, it's just that much better for you. But you're right, it is a connection to history. I mean, if you walk out and about in the fields this time of year, you would imagine people would have had a terrible winter of eating fermented foods and God knows what they ate in the winter. And this would have been a bonanza time for them, because a lot of their food that they grew on the fields would have had to go to the landlord and stuff. And they would have had to get whatever they could from the sort of edges and the hedgerows. And I think even 100 years ago or 150 years ago, a lot of this would have been common knowledge. And it's also, it's not just food, it's tools, it's making twine, it's medicine. There's so many stories and things to go with it, which I think is what brings it to life.
I guess now, though, nowadays, it's an entirely different sort of landscape, not just, you know, physically landscape, but also, I guess, we've got cars going past hedgerows, you know, exhaust fumes, you've got to be careful where you pick things from. You don't know about chemicals and things like that. So I suppose it is different in that respect. You've got to be careful now, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, you pick your battles. I mean, you know, every time I do a seaside film, everyone's like, oh my God, is there sewage and all those things? I said, well, no, I'm not doing this out, you know, I'm not doing it in Blackpool. You're trying to try and pick places which are a bit away from places and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, you know, you wouldn't want to be picking. I mean, unfortunately, a lot of the really good berries and stuff insist on growing right next to big roads. But you just have to be careful with it. You know, even in fact, when we were younger, it was probably worse because there was lead in the fuel. The fuel isn't as bad now. But also you have to be aware of, what we creatively call on the walks, DGH, which is dog genital height. to make sure that the plants are below a certain, they're below a certain level. You can take, I mean, I grew up in the countryside, so we just call it, you know, country sauce. But you do need to get the rinse, you know, be a bit careful about things like that. Don't, you know, obviously don't pick the low blackberries, you know.
Well, how realistic then is it that we could actually have a full plate of food on a regular basis that is just taken from the land around us?
Well, you could do it. You'd be miserable, but you could do it. I mean, you know, I always say that there are a lot of people at the moment doing this challenge where they're living completely off wild food for months at a time. I don't encourage people to do that kind of thing too much because, I mean, you know, this is not your replacement for your supermarket shop. I mean, it's more of a supplementary thing and it's interesting. That being said, sure, I mean, you know, there's a lot of greens. And the problem you'd have if you were trying to eat stuff from the wild is finding things like carbohydrates. You know, one thing that we can't get away from in our shops is actually something harder to find in nature because it's roots and things like that. You know, I always say if the zombies were coming, first of all, steal a cow. But you know, but there's so much goodness in it. I mean, when you buy vegetables and stuff in supermarkets, you don't know whether they how they've been processed. You don't know, you know, what they've lost in that process. When if you out and eat some, you know, some wild greens, or some of the ones on by the seaside are the best. They taste the best. They taste amazing, and you know that they, you know, it's just purely natural, and it'll do you a lot of good.
That's the thing, isn't it? And then, of course, you've got the element of trying to preserve without preservatives. But then the sort of skills you can learn in that, and it's fun, isn't it? You can be creative with how you manage to keep this food for months on end, and sometimes for a year if you're pickling and salting and that sort of thing as well.
That would have been the thing that they didn't have freezers, you know. So yeah, you learn to pickle stuff. I mean, obviously this year, when we have the sort of the bonanza that is wild garlic, and the entire world wants to make pesto. Pesto is a good one to make, but also you can take like the buds of the wild garlic and you can pickle them, and they make these fantastic little garlic flavored capers. I've just done the same with what are called ash keys, which are the seeds of ash trees, and they sort of go like capers as well. And obviously, when you get to the fruit season, you make jams and preserves because we used to eat seasonally like that. When I was a kid, you know, my mother would all go out and pick blackberries. She'd get all the windfall apples and you know she could get, and we'd fill the freezer with frozen apples and blackberries. We'd have apple and blackberry crumble and stuff during the winter. And I was actually going to make t-shirts for my brand saying "No strawberries this Christmas, bitch," because really, strawberries at Christmas, I just think, please, you know, we should be. I think our bodies are designed to eat seasonally like that, and pickled foods, you know, are great. It maintains a lot of the goodness, you know. I mean, I did say that, you know, everyone always gives everyone chutney at Christmas, and it isn't actually physically possible to finish an entire jar of chutney. You never find enough occasions, but it is still really, really good and really tasty. And obviously, the other great thing you can do is we do a thing called booze from the bushes, which is, you know, and I've literally just nearly blown up my bathroom with elderflower champagne, and you know, we make slow gin, and I just made pineapple weed gin and those kind of things as well. So there's lots of fun stuff you can do like that, which is actually quite tasty.
And I've noticed quite a few of the things you've mentioned we do have on the island. I love pineapple weed. It's great, isn't it? And, you know, obviously loads of wild garlic. And yes, you're right. It is something we all do over here. We all go out and get the wild garlic.
Why not? It's
I know,
great.
it's great fun. And it's something as well you can get the kids involved with, and it's sort of creating a knowledge for them growing up and being aware of what's around them. And the idea of them feeling like they have to protect what's around them maybe as well is an element of that too. What do you know then about what is available here on the Isle of Man? Because you are going to be coming over here and doing some walks. Do you know what we've got here? Is it very similar to the rest of the British Isles?
I think so.
You hope so.
What I do is that it's quite funny with these walks because I really make the road for my own back. I go all over the country, and sometimes I don't even get time to do a recce beforehand. So I just turn up and I'm like, well, hopefully we'll just find things that we recognise. Most of the UK, you've got a pretty similar selection of things. Obviously, you have a slightly different climate over there, so it might be different. There might be more maritime species. I would say, from what I've seen, it's going to be relatively similar. Thankfully, there's three amazing ladies who've kind of set this up for me. One of them is actually a forager, so she's going to sort of help me out with it, just sort of like give me points of where we're going and stuff. And I'll hopefully get a chance to have a look around. But one of the funny things on the walks, I often think to myself, you know, oh, I haven't got enough to talk about. And then I turn around and you see these people whose eyes are completely fried from the fact I've just explained 50 species to them, and they remember like six. So there'll be plenty to talk about. And we're going up to Ballyglass Glen, which I've never been to, but I had a look at pictures. It looks absolutely sensational. So I'm really looking forward to it.
It is absolutely stunning there, I have to say. And I love the fact that on your site you've listed some of the plants that you say that we may find on this journey. I recognise a few. Thistle, daisy, buttercup, very good. However, some of them just sound like they're from a comedy sketch. Queen Anne's lace, goosegrass, spurgeon, charlock. mean, that's amazing.
I mean, which makes me laugh because its nickname is Sticky Willy. And we do a a drink. Because you put beach grass into water and leave it overnight, and it has a sort of a cucumber taste, and it's a really good diuretic, and it's good for your lymphatic system. But of course, me being a child of the 80s, I just call it Sticky Willy juice, and that almost went viral. I mean, I know it's silly, but it's funny. And it's the same with you know, some of these plants have the most peculiar names. Mushrooms are even worse. I'm not even going to go into them because you wouldn't. This is a radio show channel, but they just sound so dodgy. But I think I like the common names because I don't use Latin names very much because I think that it's much more familiar and it tends to describe the plant. I mean, Queen Anne's lace is a good example. They used to wear these lacy collars. Queen Anne was the queen of James the First, and it's basically apparently Queen Anne's lace has a little sort of dot in the middle, which is supposed to be a spot of her blood where she was making lace. So it's lovely little stories that help people remember, which is why I find plants more interesting than fungi, because fungi don't often have the same sort of folklore stories that go with them as plants do.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of what you do. Obviously, it's the whole Eat the Country thing is when you do go on your walks, you do have these fabulous stories, you're raconteur as well, aren't you? So it's educational. It's also fun, really good fun. And the folklore element, we love that over here. It's going to go down so well. And it sounds like the walks are getting pretty much sold out now. There are a couple of spaces left, I think. So do get yourselves booked on there. But is there anything that you're sort of really hoping to get from your trip to the Isle of Man?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's the first time I've been to the island, so I'm hoping that we'll find something that, I mean, you know, people might think if you go on a walk with a forager and they don't recognise something, it's bad. For me, that's always wonderful because it's a journey for me as well. I'm hoping to find some things that I've never seen. I'm also sort of a closet twitcher as well, so I'm sure you've got some bird species there that I won't have seen either. I think also, the Isle of Man is kind of a mysterious place to me. I've been to, like, Guernsey. That's pretty strange, too. And I want to get a sense of it. And I have been saying to the girls, you know, if I get this wrong, you're not going to put me into a wicker statue and set fire to me or anything like that, you know. I'm not some sort of pagan sacrifice, but I think what I just love about going to a new place, get a feel for it, hopefully, you know, what I've discovered doing these walks is that, you know, I spend far too much time on social media, and social media is always trying to make everyone against each other for one reason. I've done 400 or 500 people on these walks, and everybody's great, and everyone's nice, and everyone's fun, and there's such a laugh, and that's why I want people to come along. We just have a really good laugh, you know, and if we have a pint afterwards or something, and it's easy going. It's not like a primary school teacher. We, you know, there's funny stories, and you know, I this is why I love it.
And I think the thing as well, which I love about these things too, is you do come away with a brand new appreciation for the world around you and the countryside around you, which, I mean, if you can get more people more aware of their environment, that is a win-win, isn't it?
Completely. I mean, some people are, you know, in some industries, people are sort of, you know, they keep their information to themselves. I just want people to learn. I don't try to, you know, bamboozle people or be smarter than them. I want them to feel empowered, you know, because when you go out for a walk and you're with your dog or whatever it is, and suddenly you know what a number of species are, it just brings the whole thing to life. And again, you can eat some things, you can use some medicinal things. I mean, for example, you can use things like plantains for nettle stings, you can use willow bark for painkillers, and there's all these kind of things which everyone would have known, and you just feel much closer to nature as a result. And when you go for your long walks and stuff like that, it's a much more interesting. I always say I never feel alone in nature anymore, because I know what you are, and I know what you are, and I know your story, and it's amazingly empowering.
And have you found that, I mean, I'm sure you get asked this a lot, but I'm guessing that since COVID, there's been a lot more interest from the general public in nature.
Oh, completely. I mean, I think we were all hooped up, weren't we? And people, you know, just wanted to go. I mean, I started doing a lot of this in the park at Wandsworth, because I was staying with my sister in Clapham at the time. One of the reasons I was doing death or dinner, because there wasn't an awful lot to do in the park. But it was, you know, I think that people are, there is a definite interest in this, not just from a sort of, you know, survival perspective. I think people are out and about more, and they're looking for things to do other than just walk. I think the medicinal thing is people are particularly interested in that. I mean, obviously, you've got to be careful, but people are very interested in that kind of thing as well. And as you say, things like folklore, people, I think, they like to sort of connect with the past, connect with nature in a way that a lot of our generation didn't do that. I mean, so many people I know are sort of going not just down the route of this, but they're going into spiritual things, and they're going to yoga and Pilates and all these kind of things. And weirdly, all this stuff is connected, you know, forest bathing and being grounded and this sort of stuff. And I meet so many people who are doing those things at the same time on their own journeys.
It's really, it is so encouraging. I mean, the fact that you've got like, what, 130,000 followers or something on Instagram, it just shows that there is that interest out there.
I don't use that word influencer. It sounds so stupid. But people, when I'm trying to sort of talk to someone, I go, I have got a bit of a following, but I don't, you know, because it's just like beans on toast to me. There's loads of people, and they are very funny, and they, you know, I mean, a lot of them are Americans, and they can be quite interesting, quite volatile. But it, you know, it's very interesting. It's a lovely community. There's probably about 600 or 700 people that I communicate with reasonably regularly, and they're such lovely people. I mean, they send me pictures of things that they want to talk about and what's this, and you know, they show me their walks and stuff. And you know, there's a lot of bad things about social media, but for me, you know, I just enjoy chatting to all these people all the time. And, you know, I do a quiz once a week online, and there's 500-600 people do that. It's great.
I think it's how you use it, though, isn't it? Because, you know, if you have got something positive to share and you can reach a lot of people with a really important message, then, hey, go for it. That's great.
Well, I mean, the thing that's horrified me about this is I'm actually a teacher now. I mean, when I was at school, I didn't get on well with teachers, and they didn't get on well with me. My ex-wife was a teacher, so I thought the last thing I'd ever want to be is a teacher. I didn't do it for that reason. But then I've realised this. I inadvertently, I've turned myself into one. And I think one of the reasons was that I grew up in the 80s, and we had very, very larger than life TV presenters like David Bellamy and Johnny Ball and Keith Floyd and people like that. And I just thought, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it as me, and I'm going to do it, you know, with my personality and my sense of humor and everything else. And if you don't like it, don't watch it. And that seems to work. And it's that, you know, that's how you bring it to life, you know, from my perspective.
Absolutely. And I should say as well, you know, we mentioned the whole sticky willy juice, whatever you call it, which is amazing. You do have recipes on your site, don't you? So if someone is kind of listening to this and feeling inspired, they can go and find some of this stuff. Obviously, they have to be very careful, as you said, but then they can follow recipes on your page. So actually, they can make something with what they find.
Yeah, I mean, I've only got about 6 or 7 on there at the moment. I've just had the website done, so I'm slowly starting time to populate it. But I try and keep things very simple. I mean, for example, you know, in the wintertime, I did a lot of beating on the local pheasant shoots, and I've got a lot of pheasant, and there's not a lot you can do with it. I've got tons of the stuff. So just looking for ways to make it interesting, I ended up just covering in salt and vinegar crisps, and suddenly it turned into a fantastic drink snack. And, you know, and obviously those things, you know, like slow gin, which is super easy to make, but it's just like Christmas in a glass. It's a really fun thing to do. And this year is going to be amazing for fruit. Well, we had a cold winter for once, and it's reset everything, and the trees are dripping with fruit this year already. So I will try and encourage people when I'm on the island to, you know, to get involved and do stuff like that, because it's, you know, there's something quite old-fashioned about having little bottles of things fermenting and bubbling away, and, you know, pickles and things on your show. It's all very kind of lifestyle and homespun. It's lovely.
And it's sort of a lesson in patience as well, isn't there? Because I know when I've made the gin before, and hedgerow gin, whatever, slow gin, you've got that sort of length of time to wait for it. And it's incredibly satisfying, but it is a bit of a lesson in patience.
Oh, 3 months. Yeah, that's hard. I mean, I don't always take it that far. But what I would suggest to people is to make stuff with things like damsons, because they're already sweet. So you only need to leave them in about 3 weeks. Slow gin, it just gets better the longer you leave it. And you know, also, someone actually gave me a bottle on the walks for the day. I drink it in the summer as well, just like with a bit of ice and some soda, and it's actually a summer drink. So, but it's always so satisfying that, you know, particularly when you pick something. I mean, like the pineapple weeds. You know, I've always loved that smell. It's a type of chamomile. And someone said to make some gin with it. I thought, that's a good idea. And you just shove it all in a bottle with gin, and the next morning the smell's unbelievable. Put a bit of sugar syrup in there to make it a bit more sort of, and on the walks, honestly, people just, they're fighting each other to get a glass of it.
See, now I'm going to try that one. So the walks are the 19th and the 20th of July. There are, I think, a couple of spaces left, definitely worth getting on them. And so far, nobody's died on your walks.
Not yet. I mean, there was an old woman, and I thought she was going to drop dead. I thought that'd be really bad PR. But to be fair, she battled her way around and then threw down a pint of cider as soon as she got to the end. So she was fine.
Oh, brilliant. It's clearly going to be excellent fun. Well, listen, Tom, just let us know where we can find out more about what you do.
Yeah, well, if you come to, if you want to look at my Instagram, it's also Instagram, TikTok and Facebook. It's just Eat the Country, all one word. And if you want to look a book in the walks, eatthecountry.com, and there's our walks page, and you can look on there. So the 20th is almost full, and the 19th is almost full. 20th is a few spaces, and it's just going to be a right old joy, so come along.
I've never found a four-leaf clover, which explains a lot. And on that crumbling, dusty bookshelf of facts and made-up stuff, have a wonderful day.